Have you ever felt frustrated because you just couldn't find a lovely book to read? I can start to crave not just a good book, but a book that draws me in and evokes such a deep emotion that I can say, wow, that was a lovely book. Welcome, friends. This is Emmy B on Lovely Books Podcast, where it's my job to highlight the lovely books that keep you reading and connect you to the world. If you're new to Lovely Books, this podcast is more than just a best books podcast. It's about the reader's experience and takeaway. No book reviews, no analysis of literary content, just thoughts and personal anecdotes brought to our minds by the characters and subject matter that we love. That's what brings the book to life for you. I hope we give you something to think about, something to laugh about, and something lovely to read. In this episode of Lovely Books Podcast, we have the unique pleasure of discussing audiobooks with narrator Nancy Peterson. Nancy has narrated almost 100 books in her notable career and is also the winner of the 2018 Audio Award for Inspirational Faith-Based Fiction for Catching the Wind by Melanie Dobson. A vocal music performance major at the University of Utah, Nancy also studied acting at the Professional Actors Conservatory of Salt Lake. Nancy, thank you so much for being here with me today. Before we dive into a few questions I have for you, do you want to tell us anything else about yourself?
Yes, I am originally here from Utah, grew up here, and then moved away for a few years and became a dental hygienist, which I absolutely loved. And I still do that now and then at my office. Otherwise, I'm a full-time narrator. I have a family with 6 children, 2 dogs, some tarantulas,
awesome.
A couple of snakes. I can't list them all. Plus I have a hive of bees. That's really my love is beekeeping.
Neat. That's really neat.
Yeah. So that's a little about me.
Well, cool. Well, I have to admit that, my first thought of interviewing a narrator made me a little nervous because I don't know how my voice sounds. I'm not a vocal professional. And
it's funny. I don't think we think about it, you know?
No.
I don't critique people's voices when I hear them speak.
Yeah, but it is funny because having just started this podcast, it's only 6 months old. The first couple times I listen to my voice, it's always different. I mean, clearly we hear ourselves differently than we sound in our own heads. And so the first few podcast recordings, I just had to shake my head at myself and say, oh my goodness, is that really what I sound like? Because it's such a unique experience.
Yeah, that really is a thing. I think everyone has to kind of work through that, regardless if you're, you know, interested in voiceover or audiobook work. It's really strange to hear yourself outside of your own head.
Yeah,
for the first few times. But one thing that I think is lovely is our voices are really unique. I mean, you know, if you hear a radio spot with a celebrity, you can almost always, you know who it is, right? There are just things about, there's almost like a fingerprint that makes our voice unique. And that's not always the case. I mean, like, I'll tell you a funny story. My dad got on the phone with my older sister and was talking to her about 20 minutes. And then he said something like, well, when is your husband coming home? And she's like, Dad, do you know who you're talking to? This is my single sister.
Uh-huh.
And he said, yeah, it's Nancy. And she's like, no, this is Janice. So, you know, I mean, in the family, you might have some similar things.
Yeah.
But, and I think what I'm getting at along with that is there, as far as voice work, there's no one right voice. There's no one perfect voice. I mean, everyone has their way of doing things. You can listen to a variety of, especially audiobooks or podcasts, and you fall in love with those people, not necessarily because they have this beautiful voice, but it's because of who they are and who that voice becomes to you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. That's great. I'm gonna keep that in mind as I keep having to listen to myself on these podcasts.
You sound great.
Oh, thank you. I have to say too, I have to admit that I am new to audiobooks. I have never in my life listened to audiobooks. And this year in 2020, I actually listened to my first one. It was The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas. And it just sucked me right in. And so since then,
I've been doing audiobooks through the library along with all of my reading. I always kind of have an audiobook going. But audiobooks draw me in a way, as much as I love to read, in a way that's unique.
Yes.
It creates.
I agree with you 100%. For me, I've loved audiobooks since I was small. My dad, when I was young, had an eye injury. I was really young, like 3. So I just have little snippets of memories. But he was unable to see. He was unable to move out of his bed for, I think it was 3 months. I could be remembering it wrong because I was so small, but it was a long time. And I do remember he had sandbags next to his head so he wouldn't move. And because of the surgery, we would get these, I think they came in the mail, but they were square, like floppy plastic records that you would put on your record player. It was the Reader's Digest or okay. the Times, or, you know, it was magazines and papers. And I would very carefully go in there because I didn't want to disturb him. And I would listen with him.
Yeah.
And I would listen to him when he wasn't there. Sometimes I'd take him and just listen to them. And then when I was in sixth grade, my friends and I would take Encyclopedia Brown paperbacks and read them into a tape recorder that we weren't supposed to be playing with.
Right. Oh, how
but
fun.
We had so much fun. So it's my friends. I mean, this is my lifelong friends I've had since I was, you know, very, again, like 4 years old.
Yeah.
And last time I saw them at a wedding, they're like, do you realize you're doing what we used to do? You've been preparing for this career your whole
yeah,
life.
Yeah, I love
and
that.
So that was really fun. But audio for me has been a part of my life for as long as I can remember. And it has saved me driving because I am one of those drivers that tends to get highway hypnosis? You get really
yeah.
sleepy.
Mm-hmm.
But if I put an audiobook in, I'm there. I am awake. I'm alert. I'm able to function and drive long distances. Like, you know, a 6-hour stretch. If I'm listening to an audiobook, I'm awake. So that's one thing that I absolutely love about audiobooks. And there's a lot of studies now that show that especially kids who have difficulty reading, audiobooks actually can help them learn to read. It, first of all, it gives them a love for the written word. Whereas
yeah.
if they have difficulty or if they have a learning disability or if they have sight issues, they can still get the wonderful, you know, stories and be a part of these wonderful experiences that a book brings to you that mm-hmm. otherwise you may not be able to have. So,
well, and I love,
awesome.
Yeah. And I love that, with an audiobook as you have that outside voice, but because you don't have the visual, you're still able to create your own picture within your own mind and visualize things based on your own experience. Whereas, you know, even a book or a movie based on a book, it's just simply not the same.
Yeah. There's a real secret there. I hope you don't mind if I share lots of stories.
Please do.
I have another story.
Please do.
Okay. Before I started narrating audiobooks, I have my favorites. I have some that I listen to over and over. I love them so much. And especially when I'm doing something I love, it brings me comfort in a way. So I would be, you know, creating some cards. I love to make homemade cards or scrapbooks or whatever. And I would be creating these things and I'd be listening to something. Well, one of my favorites, well, actually, I'm not going to tell you who it is. I don't want to do that. But I'll tell you, there was one that I listened to and I'm like, oh, this narrator is so amazing. She can do the dad. She can do, and this was a British narrator who I've
yeah.
adored for years. Love her work. She can do this little girl. She does the dad. She does this amazing, you know, very distinct dialect for the cook. I mean, and she does this whole village and they're all so unique. And when I started to decide I wanted to pursue audiobook narration myself, I went back and listened again and I realized something really important. The voices were not that different.
Oh.
What she was is an amazing storyteller.
Yeah.
So much so that when I heard those things, I made a completely different character in my own mind. Does
yeah.
that make sense?
Yeah, that's really neat.
I love, there are people who are really talented at doing a million different voices and they
yeah.
can do a really good job at that. But it's also great if you're a good storyteller. There's a gift about, you know, pacing, pauses.
Yeah.
Maybe making little quirks in a character that don't necessarily, and you don't have to, because guess what? No one's going to believe, you know, like I'm a 80-year-old man, right?
And right,
I do
right.
play 80-year-old men in some of these books. I'm, yeah. you know, doing some German characters right now. I'm not German, but I, you know, I give them a little bit different cadence. I don't do maybe a full German accent, but there are little things that you can add where when someone's listening, it's almost like they're creating the story.
Yeah.
Instead of me handing them a story, they're creating it. And I think that makes it even more impactful because it's yours.
Definitely.
You know, when you're able to tell a story that way.
That's really neat. I really love that. Yeah. And I haven't ever thought of it that way, that the voices aren't that different. That makes me want to go back and listen to some books.
Narrator. Some people really do have a gift of, you know, doing many different voices and they can do it really well. But I think that's one way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But the other way is to let the reader's mind fill in those blanks.
Yeah.
And I do think it becomes more powerful. That's my personal opinion.
That's really great. Okay, so your Audi Award is for inspirational and faith-based fiction, but you've narrated all different kinds of books, right?
Yes.
Do you have a preference or like a range? I mean, there's so much variety in genre and age range for books. Is there one that you really love?
You know, that is a really good question. I've come to appreciate most genres at this point. And I'll say at this point, I'm actually closer to 150 books done. And I really do. And it's interesting. I'll tell you a little something that someone mentioned to me, a narrator friend said, they mentioned it in a group actually, that they don't enjoy narrating the type of books they listen to.
Oh.
They love listening to fantasy or sci-fi. But when they narrate it, it's hard. And part of that is because there are unusual names and characters that may need a little, you know, that may be difficult to voice, especially if they have certain characteristics that are mentioned in the text. And so I think most narrators are happy just to narrate a good book.
You know?
So my wheelhouse, though, what I'm known for is the historical fiction. Okay. And especially Time Slip, which is present day and past coming together somehow. And I'm actually just stepped away from my booth right now as I'm in the middle of another one.
Cool.
And I do a lot of those. I do love those because they usually have a little bit of a twist and there's some suspense and mystery. And I do enjoy those. So I do like mystery.
Yeah.
And I like historical fiction a lot. I think they're all good.
I love historical fiction too. Okay.
And some of the people I've met online actually live here, which is kind of funny.
That's fun.
I really do enjoy narrating most genres.
Excellent. Do you ever turn books down? What is that process? I imagine it's the publisher that hires you. Is that right? How does that work?
Well, so there are a couple of ways. How I started is I started on a website, I guess it's a website called acx.com. It's a platform where authors can actually put their independent work that they have published on Amazon, mm-hmm. and the narrators can audition for them.
Cool.
And it's kind of nice. That's how I started. It was very convenient because I live in Utah, first of all, and at the time when I started, most of the work was being done at the big publishing houses, which are on the coasts typically. And so there are a few that are not. But so I didn't have access, you know, I couldn't be in studio. And so I started working for independent authors on ACX. And in that process, you know, that's a little interesting because sometimes you'll get offers to narrate something that is either completely out of your wheelhouse or I hate to say this, but there are actually scams out there.
Oh.
And yeah. And people will send these offers to you. And to turn them down, you either just don't respond to them or you can actually decline an offer. And that's built in to the process with ACX, which is nice. And sometimes you're just not a good fit. I mean, there have been times I'm like, you know, I don't think I'm the right narrator for this.
Yeah.
And thank you. Anyway, but with the bigger publishers, what they'll usually do is they'll either send you an offer directly, or they'll ask if they can submit you for an audition. Okay. And usually in that case, if they, you know, right up front what their deadline is and if you can or cannot make the deadline. And that's a little trickier because you don't have the same opportunity necessarily to really understand the book or the text. And so sometimes, you know, you're accepting a project that you don't know completely what's in it.
Yeah.
But you can turn them down, and they appreciate if you would turn them down if you really can't do it. Or if, for example, if you have an accent that is in the book that you just know that you are not going to do any good at, you will not be doing a service to the book by pretending.
It
doesn't work out. And I think that's getting more and more the case. I think in the last year, people are looking for more authentic voices. Yeah. In the past, you know, I've done Regency romance and I do a British accent throughout the entire book. Well, in the last year, maybe two, there's really been a push for the people who really know and understand the nuance in some of these to be the ones to narrate them. And I can't say that I disagree. You know, I will say that I probably won't be voicing many other books that are not standard American.
Yeah.
And so as an actor, that kind of makes me, you know, sad because I love the opportunity.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's probably true. You know, it's someone who's from the area will probably do it better justice. If, for example, I have a British character in a book, hey, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, but if the main character really, I just want to make sure I'm doing the best job for the genre, for the author, and for the message in the book too. Make it authentic.
That's great. So I have kind of a random question. So I'm not a crier. I know a lot of people who get very teary over books. They just get so sucked in. And I'm just, not that I don't feel the feels of all the, you know, whatever's of the books. But I am myself not a crier. But have you ever had to read something that was like emotional for you? Does that ever come up in your narration of a book or something like actually moves you in the course of your narration? And is that something you edit out of?
You know, that's a good question. I would say most of the time when I'm reading, I'm able to disconnect enough that I'm not, you know, like tears or, you know, sounds or whatever, that I can read through it. You might hear a little stuffy in the nose.
Yeah.
Or you might hear some, you know, something different in my voice. But I try almost to let that authentic feeling come through. If it gets unintelligible or if I start really crying, then no way, I have to step away. But that's okay to let a little emotion through, and maybe a lot. I think it really depends on the book too.
Yeah. Is it the same?
Who's speaking? And if it's the omniscient narrator, you don't want the omniscient narrator sobbing. You know, they're very disconnected, right?
Right.
But if it's the main character and they are having a moment, it's fine to allow that moment to really come through.
So it takes, I mean, I imagine it takes a very long time to narrate a book, other than just what the edited final copy sounds like. So do you get a chance to actually read the entire book before you go through the narration?
That's my goal, is to read the entire book. If I'm on a tight deadline, I can hire someone to read it for me who's a professional preparer.
Okay.
They'll read the book. They'll give me a breakdown of all the characters and a summary of each chapter and any background information that's relevant. And then that's almost as good.
Yeah.
I do like to read it myself. I think that's the ideal. So I do have to schedule in what I call prep days of, you know, maybe 2 to 3. It's interesting because in the genre I usually do, those are anywhere from, they're usually about 300 pages, sometimes a little more. And so I have to schedule in 2.5 days of just reading. That's what I do on those days is read and make notes if I need to and prepare the text. And
so, I mean, like 2 to 3 days of straight reading sounds like heaven to me. Can I just read? I don't really want to narrate, but if I could just like squeeze those read days in, I mean, I think that'd be fun.
Yeah, that is, it is kind of fun. And it's, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I get paid to read.
It's so cool.
It's really awesome.
It's so cool. I'm curious if, what they send you in terms of like format, does it look different than the book that I'm used to picking up at Barnes and Noble? Are you reading a book or are you reading something that looks more like a film script or like, what does that look like?
Okay. I've had the most popular method is a PDF and I have an iPad that I read directly off. I have some software that I can mark it up if I need to, or I can put bookmarks or I can, you know, it works really well for what I'm doing. So I will usually read it off that. It's sometimes exactly just a digital copy of the book. However, there are times when the publisher has done an edit themselves. This is especially true, say, with nonfiction, where either there's diagrams, tables, additional information, footnotes. They'll go through and they'll put a red line through the things they don't want me to read or they want me to skip, or they'll alter what they would like to say. So instead of talking about a table, I actually just give the information. You know, I just say whatever's on line A, and so I just say it like it's not even in a table.
Okay.
And so those are probably the most common. In years ago, they used to just get the book, and they would have to cut the spine off, and there was an art to turning the pages so they didn't make a sound. I only had 5 books like that.
Wow.
But it was a great story. It was something I absolutely loved, and so I honestly didn't mind reading from the pages like that.
Well, and that's interesting because I have noticed since podcasting, I usually have like 3x5 cards and like notes all around me. And every once in a while, when I go into my edit, I hear like my paper moving across the table and I'm like,
Yeah.
So I imagine, you know, that sound would pick up. And you're able to do this from home. So you have like a sound studio set up where you can...
I do. And again, that's changed over the years. I started, I'm almost embarrassed to tell you what I started with. Maybe I shouldn't tell you.
Oh, tell us.
Well, my kind husband has been so supportive. He found for sale online some big sheets of foam core. And I went and picked them up. They were free.
Yeah.
There were like 6 of them. They were huge. I mean, they were like, you know, 6 feet by 2 and a half or 3 feet. Oh, he's correcting me. 8 feet by 4 feet.
Okay.
And so he cut them up. He made stands. He cut them so he could make stands out of them.
Yeah.
And then he found a chicken farmer who was giving away egg cartons.
I love
I'm
it.
Not kidding. And
I love
he got
it.
The glue gun out and he glued these egg cartons on in different patterns so that it would be irregular. So, you know, it would break things up.
Yeah.
And so that was really my first...
I hope you have a picture of that.
I think I do somewhere.
Oh, I hope you do. That's just timeless.
Yeah.
That's cool. And then over time, it's just evolved into you.
Yeah, it's evolved. I do have basically a room within a room now. It's a box, 4x8. It's actually plenty of room to go and stand in or sit in. I usually stand up. It's just better on my back if I stand. A lot of people sit. But I have a monitor in there. I have my mic. I have everything I need to control it within the booth. And it works out really well and it's very quiet. So
how long can you do that at a single sitting? Like before you get like the antsy fidgeties and you got to like stop reading. And
I think I can stand there for 30 minutes at a stretch pretty comfortably. And then I'll usually, like today, I got out and I stretched, you know, because here's the thing. I can't move around a lot in there because, well, number one, I have to wear clothing that is quiet because if I don't, it rustles.
Yeah.
And I have to make sure I'm either not wearing any jewelry or jewelry that's not dangly or, you know, has little sounds to it.
Yeah.
There's that. But, and pants too. So I wear like, I have like sweatpants and, you know, I'm very comfortable when I get into the booth.
Your cozy clothes. I love it.
Yes. I love it too. It's awesome. I have my jammies I wear at night, my jammies I wear during the day.
Yeah.
So I just go in there and just record. And that will equal anywhere from 10 minutes of actual audio to 20 if I'm doing well, because I get kind of stiff because I don't move a lot. I'll maybe move my hands and my arms a little, but you know, standing in the same position is kind of hard on you. So I'll go out and I'll do some stretches, or I'll go for a walk, or, you know, do a little bit of yoga or whatever. But I'm finding, especially as I get older, that's really important to make sure I'm taking those breaks and allowing my body to move. It's very sedentary. It's not.
Yeah. Well, and I imagine too, like your vocal cords can get fatigued. I mean, obviously as this is your profession, you've probably trained your vocal cords to be able to speak for such an extended period of time, to be talking all day long, which most people are not used to. I find that when I'm reading stories to my kids before they go to bed, I have 5 kids. And when I read to them at night, if I haven't used my voice a lot, I get like really dry, you know, like my throat gets really caught up and I have a hard time reading for 20 minutes, you know? So is that like something that's trained?
Part of it is. I mean, the more you do it, obviously, it's like any sort of part of your body that you just need to develop.
Yeah.
And it really helped that I was a vocal major, vocal performance major, because, you know, they teach you how to breathe and I use my whole body really. It's not just my vocal folds or the vocal cords. I use my whole body. I'm using my torso. I'm using a lot of support, and I really can go most of the day. I don't know that everyone can. I feel very fortunate. I have a pretty good voice that does, it's pretty strong as far as that goes, you know?
Yeah.
So my husband has narrated a couple of books and he can't do it as long as I can during the day.
So with your vocal performance, if I can touch on that for just a second, did you ever think of making a career out of singing? I mean, you do theater. Did you do theater in college as well?
I didn't when I was in college. College for me was really interesting because I had a scholarship in vocal performance, and I was completely intimidated by the talent that was there. And I think that was part of the reason why I ended up going into dental hygiene, because I did think about it. I mean, obviously, you know, they're pushing you in that direction to become a professional singer.
Yeah.
But it really takes over. What they required was very stringent. And I realized, I don't know if I'm cut out for this.
Yeah.
I was worried that I would not like it anymore. And I was also worried that I always had it in the back of my mind. Well, I don't know if I want to be a professional singer. So how is this going to impact my future career?
Yeah.
If I just couldn't envision myself doing that as a profession.
Yeah.
But it did serve me very well. And I am grateful for it.
Do you ever get to sing in books? I've never heard an audio. I'm new to audiobooks, so I don't know. Do you get to sing in books?
I have. And it depends on the publisher.
Okay.
Most publishers don't want you to use singing.
Okay.
But I have, and especially independent ones where it's either a public domain song or it's something original that the author has written. I have done it a couple of times. If you've ever listened to Harry Potter with the Jim Dale version, he sings.
Does
and
he?
I think he I just, I don't know for sure, but I think he just makes up the tune as he goes.
How
and
interesting.
Maybe he's thought about it in his head, but.
There's never notes in books. So is that up to the narrator to like pick a tune? Like, how does that work?
Okay, well, I'll tell you one instance, and I will talk about this author because this was one that I did sing. Sarah Eden. I don't know if you know Sarah. She is also a local author.
Cool.
And I adore her books. She does a lot of series. I've done, I think, 3 or 4 of her Hope Springs series. And if I'm remembering correctly, book 2 was the one where I actually sang a song. And this song was an actual song, an Irish tune. It's in the public domain, so I could sing it without any copyright infringement.
Yeah.
But I had to go find it because it's an actual Irish folk song. So I did. I had to do some research. I had to go find it. I had to listen to it. And then I had to, it's nice that I'm a, you know, understand how notes work. So I actually wrote out the notes to it.
Yeah.
And I actually sang in that one. It just, you know, I think it just depends because on that one, it just, it needed music.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty critical moment of the story and it needed that song.
Is there often any sort of background music or like any sort of cinematic effect in audiobooks?
I would say that's more rare. Mm-hmm. I've heard it and I've been part of that. And sometimes it works really, really well. For the most part, though, I would say if it's not done well, it's more of a distraction.
Mm-hmm.
And typically for what I've done, I've never done anything in the middle of the book. It's usually, you know, the beginning credits or the end credits where you're introducing the book or you're, you know, doing the copyright information. They'll sometimes do that. And I have done that before and know people who have done that. So it's just not very common.
Interesting. What would you say the benefit is of listening to the audiobook versus the written words?
Oh, I have to tell you, I do not like doing dishes. I don't like folding clothes. You can't read a book while you're doing dishes. You can't read a book while you're folding clothes. And for me, if I can put on a good audiobook that I'm into, I am like, give me more. Give me more dishes to do.
Yeah.
I can, you know, give me a floor to mop. Give me something to do. Put my earbuds in and vacuum. Anything that you really don't enjoy doing, but you can't be sitting down and reading a book. For me, it makes those sometimes mundane or sometimes hard or unenjoyable tasks we all have to do.
Right.
Much more enjoyable.
Yeah. So. I definitely, from my short experience with audiobooks, I can definitely see that as something, because I've listened to it, for example, at the gym when I'm, you know, like doing my workout and like I peter out, you know, but with an audiobook, it's true. And I will say too, with a few audiobooks that I've listened to with my kids in the car, that they're always like, do we have to get out of the car yet? What's going to happen? Tell me what's going to happen. The hard thing though with audiobooks is, and what's your thoughts on this, is that, you know, and I always wonder with my children, there isn't a rating. Is there? There's not a rating for audiobooks.
You know, that is tricky because especially the biggest producer and distributor of audiobooks is Audible.
Mm-hmm.
There is no rating on there. And so you kind of have to go by reviews.
Yeah.
But for my listeners, I've created a spreadsheet on my Facebook page.
That's neat.
It's a content spreadsheet. And it, because some of the things I do, I mean, I do a lot of World War II.
Yeah.
And in that, there are some disturbing themes. There's some things that are very hard to listen to. So I, even though they're very good and they're important, you know, it may not be appropriate for a child.
Really. Yeah.
A younger child anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That was one thing I brought up very early on as I started doing audiobooks. But I don't know that there's been enough push from the public to ask for a rating system.
Yeah.
And I know some people are opposed to it, but I can totally, I mean, as a mother myself and a grandma now, that's really important to me because I have especially one little grandchild who is immensely sensitive to things that are scary.
Yeah.
And it will not leave him, and he will be terrified for weeks if he hears or, you know, something. So I think it's a really valid point. I don't see it happening anytime soon. And so maybe that's where we as listeners be able to call him up or, you know, just give input saying, we need this.
Well, and I mean, they do it for music. I'm thinking, you know, because I listen to audiobooks, and if my kids are in the car and I'm listening to an audiobook, I usually let them listen with me. And I have younger children. My kids range in age from 13 to 3. So they're little. And, you know, if I'm reading a book out loud to them, I can edit what comes out of my mouth. If I'm listening to the radio or listening to Spotify or Pandora, I can see the content rating for that, for the music that's coming across. So I know that in general, we're not going to hear whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think that is interesting. And I love that you've created that spreadsheet for people who are listening to your audiobooks to give them an idea. Because I do think, like, as a parent and a, you know, someone who's listening around young children, that makes a big difference to know what's coming, you know, for those
who wants to listen through the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I don't know. I as a parent myself, that was something that I thought the same thing.
Yeah.
That I had wished for. There were some that I listened to that I had to turn off, mm-hmm. you know, when we were traveling somewhere and I'm like, oh, okay. Turn it off.
Right.
You know,
interesting. But,
well, before you leave us today, would you like to leave our listeners with a book recommendation? It can be anything.
Well, I will suggest, there are so many than one. Anything Agatha Christie.
Okay, so I have never read an Agatha Christie, and I'm overwhelmed because everybody's favorite is something different. So what's your favorite Agatha Christie?
Well, my favorite, I don't even know if it exists anymore. It was a full-on audio drama, so it multiple voices. It had sound effects. And that's a little bit different than an audio book.
Yeah.
But it was a cassette that I owned. Murder on the Orient Express.
Oh my goodness. And that sounds familiar to me.
Yes. Oh, and the one by Dan Stevenson, he's done a recent one, more recent, and it's just him, and he does a great job. Mm-hmm. So I love mystery. That's really what hooked me in audiobooks was Agatha Christie, the Hercule Poirot series. I absolutely loved that. And especially Murder on the Orient Express. I could listen to that over and over. I absolutely love it.
Oh, I love that. Well, if our listeners want to be able to connect with you online and sort of see what projects you're working on or what new books you have coming out that you've narrated, where can they do that?
Well, my social media, on all of my social media, including Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, is Nancy Peterson Narrates. And I have a website, and you can just get to it by typing in nancypeterson.com, and you can see a list of all the books I've done. I do have the content spreadsheet on my business Facebook page, which is Nancy Peterson Narrates, and you can just peruse things that you might like. I have had the privilege of doing some amazing projects for people. And like I said, many of those people just don't live that far.
Yeah.
And we have many good writers here. So, and I'm really happy. I'm really happy about that. So yeah, that's the best way to reach me.
Excellent.
On my website, if you want to send me an email, you can do that on my website or send me a message on Facebook. Or any of those other platforms I mentioned. So,
awesome. Well, thank you again so much. It's such a pleasure to have connected with you and been able to chat about something that I know so little about, but that I'm really learning to enjoy this year.
And thanks again, listeners, for joining us for this episode of Lovely Books, a special edition where we were able to take a unique perspective talking with Nancy Peterson about narrating audiobooks. If you liked what you heard today, please remember to comment, like, subscribe, leave a rating, and also check in on our Facebook and Instagram pages. Let us know your thoughts. I love to hear from listeners. So I hope you have a great week reading, and we will catch you again next Friday when we highlight another lovely book.